The following talk was given by Shokin Weinkauf at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on September 24, 2023. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Yeah, it's always a joy to come up here. Steve and Norm and I, we sort of almost grew up together, had families and our kids and at Christmas gatherings. And so it feels like a homecoming to come up here. And, so I'm about 3 hours south of here. Katagiri Roshi, you know him, right? You know, he was, founder of Minnesota Zen Center. But 5 years after he got here, he goes off and buys 280 acres of land down in southeast Minnesota. What the heck was that about? So that idea was to establish a training monastery, for American priests here in the Midwest, instead of, going back and forth to Japan. So anyway, and then eventually after a while, Hokyoji was closed because of finances. and it was closed for almost 10 years So that was like a bottom dropping out of something, because I was already coming back from Japan and 3 years there and working on establishing a training monastery. So that abbot of the monastery there said, if you can't build it there, build it someplace else. Some people said, why don't you just come to Decorah? Decorah is northeast Iowa. And we'll find you a place. So I lived in a granary on a farm at the beginning. And eventually our land was donated by somebody. Okay, so that's just a little, background. This morning, I'd like to read a section from a book called The Light That Shines Through Infinity. So this was a collection of lectures that Katagiri Roshi gave that one of the members there, Andrea Martin, pulled together. And then there are several other books of Katagiri Roshi's lectures. Steve helped edit one of those, I think, and these teachings of Katagiri Roshi, they go deeper than just looking at the surface of things, you could say. And, when he gave Dharma transmission to his disciples, usually it's a one-to-one transmission between, the priest-ordained person by the teacher would also be another step called shuso, and the final step is called Dharma transmission. And that's between just teacher and student. But he was already dying of cancer then. He died when he was 62 years old. Can you hear me okay? Okay, all right. At that Dharma transmission ceremony, we were all there, and he gave Dharma transmission to the whole group of us. And I remember he lived upstairs from the Zen Center, over by the lake. And, he came down and got up on this particular kind of podium there, you know, and he was very weak, and he came down just for that little part of that ceremony. And what he said was, if you want to be a teacher, teach oneness. So what is oneness? That teaching is like taking a deeper, broader look of who you are and who I am. So you are you, and I am I, and we are separate from each other. And yet, in a deeper way, if you look at the whole picture, you are me. And just on the basis of this morning, I am you in some way. So my coming, sparked me to rise up. And what do you have to say, Shokin, to anybody? But that quality is, how we are interwoven, interpenetrated with all life. And we could say, teach oneness is to help us to see our interconnectedness. So I'd like just to read a little of this section here. The whole book has that theme running through it. And it's not an easy read, because when you read it, it's like, what is he saying? That I'd like just to kind of break open a little bit with my own understanding, which is just my understanding. So this is a chapter called The Spiritual Mirror. So, and it's about a mirror, to really look at who we are, or what our true nature is. So let me just begin here. So he says, the original nature of existence. That's your existence, my existence, the trees on the street, the earth's existence, the satellites, the stars. The original nature of existence. The original nature. Where is he going with that? He says, is always present in our lives. But when your pure nature is tainted with some intellectual understanding, that we look at life and we have some kind of intellectual understanding, and so on, I'm this way because of my mom or my dad, or this happened and that happened and all these, He says that intellectual understanding sometimes doesn't really cut it. Basically, he says, help us to truly see our life and to live in peace. So the whole object of those teachings in Buddhism is to help us to see that our lives are broader than just you and me sitting here this morning on a Sunday morning. That our life is all, all life and all creation. And to see that is like it's bigger and beyond just my take on things. Because our take on things is always from our perspective. And we say, that's not fair. Or, I want more. You know, we're always operating under this kind of like wanting to shape things according to our way. But you and I are all old enough to know, right, that it doesn't always go our way. Right? Teacher agrees. So, yeah, we all see it. We all know it. You know, our health doesn't go our way. I'm lucky to be sitting here. You know, it's, you know, so, you know, and where are we all heading? Rumanji is on a dead end road and the sign down below the road says dead end. So we don't think much about that. But where are we heading? Where is peace? Where is kind of like that anxiousness that sometimes, that uneasiness that we all live with? It's really, you know, not seeing, in a sense, you could say, our oneness with life, which is way beyond just you and me and our take on it. So that's this kind of discussion here about spiritual mirror. You know, for a mirror, you kind of look at a mirror and it reflects back to you an image. So this mirror, a spiritual mirror, is to kind of see, not just in an intellectual way, our oneness with all human life and life beyond humanness, but it's, you know, it's, you could say one with the universe. So Katagiri Roshi says, the trouble with our seeing, he says, is that there's a kind of veil or curtain that kind of gets in our way of seeing this oneness that he said, you know, we should teach. If you want to be a teacher, teach oneness. So oneness, it's kind of abstract, you know, and you can kind of try to get to it, you know, through science. But, you know, that oneness is, you know, it is us. It's not out there someplace. So then he says, we all have this feeling of uneasiness or restlessness. And he said, you know, we're not satisfied. So he says, we need a way to lift that veil to see our pure nature. So what is that? So he says, that mirror or enlightenment, we use that term. Come on in, join the party. That mirror is, he says, takes away the curtain between object and mirror. Meaning, I am object. I am here. But who is this I? So the mirror with clear eyes sees this I that I say I am here is whole universe. Whole universe is here. The issue is, can I get with universe, with life as it is? That is not easy, so to speak, because we're so attached to just this view. So enlightenment is a little bit to kind of lift the veil, so to speak, to see our interwovenness with all life, and that it's bigger than us. So can I get with life as it is? It doesn't mean to be passive, you know, and just resign, oh, I got this and so that's it, you know, or, you know, and just be depressed, you know, the rest of your life because I only have one leg, you know, or whatever. So he says, so what that mirror is reflecting is that when we say life, we're talking about continual change. That life is a process, a living process of constantly arising and disappearing. He says, when universal emptiness is perceived, there is no longer any negation or affirmation. Meaning, you know, I could say, oh, this is really a good day, or, oh, this is really a bad day. You know, yes. In a certain way, things are good and things are bad. But sometimes those things that are bad are really, you could say, I learned it from my own experience, are turning points in our life where we start to get something, you know, like we're operating in our own little world. And when things happen that you're not counting on, that's when we find out who we are and who we aren't. That is vastly beyond. So, you know, you all just sat a period of zazen, 40 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever you sit, 10 minutes if you're sitting at home. What is the instruction of Zazen? Zazen, my take on that is to sit upright into moment that is. And when mind is weighing and saying, oh, this is really beautiful. I think I'll do this my whole life. But then people do it only for half of their life because what are you getting? You still got stuff to deal with. So I think I'll try something else. Yoga is really better because yoga, you know, you can stretch. So we're always chasing after something that way. But Zazen says, forget Zazen as a means to get more peaceful. Yeah, it helps, you know, more relaxed. Yeah, it helps. More perspective. Yeah, it helps if you kind of stop a little bit and look at things. But Zazen, you know, beyond that sort of technique or means, is the act of just bringing yourself to moment, whether it's a clank or whether the bottom falls out. How do we deal with moment? That is just be alive in suchness. It's beyond thinking. That's why he says it's beyond negation or affirmation. I don't like this or I do like this. Yeah, we all like and we don't like. But what is it to go beyond like and dislike? Can I just bring myself to this life that I've got, or to this situation, or to this broken down car and flat tire, or to this bad weather that blew down a tree last night, right almost in my bedroom where I was staying? But, you know, life is life. Can I show up and bring myself to today's day? That is Zazen. We say non-thinking. Not just trying to, you know, not think, but let go of thought and sit up in suchness as it is. So that quality is handed down from generation to generation from the Buddha's time, which is a quality of not promising anything, just bringing, you know, and merging with universe. That quality is the quality of non-thinking, beyond our take on things. And the Zen master called Dogen says, you see this in that, and that in this. That's an interesting statement, because in flat tire or divorce or losing a friend who was killed in an automobile accident by a drunk driver, see this in that and that in this. It's really see. You know, those are horrendous things for anyone. But sometimes they're turning moments. Sometimes I think twice about having a couple of beers before I get behind a wheel. Or sometimes things don't work out the way you wanted them to work out. Are changing moments. It's universe arising. The issue is, can I get with it? Can I take the next day instead of committing suicide? Those qualities are showing up. That is Zazen. Zazen is show up today. And, you know, there's a morning gatha. Gatha is a little morning prayer. I grew up, my Catholic roots, you know, we had, now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep if I die awake before, all those prayers. But, that morning gatha is, waking up this morning, I vow with all beings, because all beings are my life. You could say, I vow with all beings to realize everything without exception. What does that mean? To realize everything. To realize everything means to turn it over, you know, to deal with today's day, to deal with giving a talk when I have to give a talk. Beyond whether I like to give a talk or I don't like to give a talk. So, you know, it's like today to realize everything, not just the things I like. That's easy to do that, eating ice cream cones. But to realize everything without exception, embracing the 10 directions. 10 directions are north, south, east, west, north, west, and northeast, up and down. So that means, you know, sometime we're hit in the back of the head by things that we don't see coming. Can I get with what's happening? That's a wake-up call. So that really is, we say zazen. Zazen is it's literally upright sitting. Sit up in moment, whatever moments arising. That quality is spiritual life, or merging with oneness. So I can just kind of conclude here with, kind of with me? Does it kind of make sense? You know, yeah, you know, it kind of does, I think, you know, I mean, it makes sense to me, you know, but doing it, that is, we get swung easily by one thing or another. Somebody cuts us off, you know. It's like road rage just appears, you know, even in Zen masters sometimes, you know, so to speak. Master of what? We all are Zen masters, you know, so because it's our life we need to master, because your life is precious and sacred, because your life affects all life, like all life affects your life. So that quality is the spiritual mirror that reflects everything. It's, that is, we say, oneness. So I think, if I may say, it's my take on Buddhist teaching. So it's not just teaching, it's about living. And so just to wind up here, Katagiri Roshi said, the Buddha takes away the curtain between object and mirror. When you attain some sort of enlightenment, some sort of like kind of getting it, the veil of your human consciousness drops off and you look into the spiritual mirror. What do you see? What do you see? Your own pure nature is reflected there. But you see nothing but movement, constant change. That movement is the pure nature of your existence. Pure energy, this is his last sentence here, pure energy is arising from moment to moment in the form of your own human life. So pure energy is life, lifing. That quality is, we could say, universal emptiness. Not just counting back, you know, the universe, trying to find something, because according, like all enlightenment, everything from beginningless past is constantly, there is just arising and disappearing. We are just what? Arising and disappearing. It's not, I am separate from it. This we is arising and disappearing. It's our true nature. Or we say, what is truth? Truth is constant arising and disappearing. That quality, practically, is how do I bring myself in harmony with it? If I can't, where's peace? Where can we die with peace? Can we, you know, proceed from today's day with peace? That way we call a Buddha way. So that's my 2 cents worth. And Zen Master Dogen always says, I should tweak my own nose. So, meaning, not just talking with or to you, you know, so, you know, it starts right here too. So anyway, any question or response anybody want to throw in that make a little sense, kind of that way of thinking or looking?
Thank you, Roshi. This is Patricia Deegan from the Iowa City Zen Center. I was a student of Dainey's. And
hi, Patricia.
Hi. It's so good to see you. It's been a long time since before COVID. I thank you for your talk and your wisdom and sharing, and hopefully things will get back to normal in Iowa City, if there is such a thing. And I would like to have another teacher. I don't know how to go about it, but I just want to say thank you. Thank you so much for this morning. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate what you're saying, and I know you from way back, so that's great. So that was Iowa City. One of our priests, Dainey Applebaum, passed away last year, so they're without a priest right now down there. And so if anybody's looking for a spare job, go on. Steve, I mean, Norm, is there any free time? No, he's busy. Okay, very good. Yeah, hi. Yeah, holy cow.
I just want to thank you also. I want to thank you also for your contributions in many different places. And I think you're probably the first important Zen priest that I got to know. And I was telling somebody about you just a few days ago, how you, but apart from your being a priest and all that, you always were right there for work duty. Like at MZMC, there was work to be done. And then at Rio Mungi, the same way. The last, anytime I've been at Rio Mungi, you're willing to go weed the garden. And, but the first time I met you, I was kind of new to the whole place. And somehow or other, I ended up with a job to help, put Kapok back into the Zafus or something. And, you and I were to go and do that. So that's first time probably I ever exchanged any words. And I didn't know that you were a Dharma heir or anything like that. You were just this friendly guy that said, well, yeah, I know how to do this. So let's get going and I'll show you how to do it. So
yeah.
So you've done so many jobs, and thank you so much for your decades of work helping the Dharma in any possible way you could.
Right. Thank you for identifying yourself. I thought I knew you, but you got a little bit of a new look there. And yeah, that Zafu business, I got into helping with that. Another fellow, Tom Sushak, and but helping Tomoy Katagiri. This is Katagiri Roshi's wife. So she started this little cottage industry, the early days of Minnesota Zen Center. And it had to do with making Zafus. And so I got into it, you know, sewing them and making it. And I got into it because it was such a nice connection with Tomoy Katagiri. But she's still living. She's 91. And anyway, this Tom Sushak, he was the kind of little bookkeeper for that little cottage industry. And he said over a 10-year period, I think that we had done that, or 15, that we sold over 1,000 zafus and zabutans as a little cottage industry. Where did these come from? I don't know, you know, but anyway. That's kind of, we are them. They are us. So, any other kind of comment or? How's day-to-day life in Minneapolis these days? I used to live up here. I see more cars up here than a whole year down in Decorah. If you get tired of Minneapolis, you come to Decorah. But the word's out, I think. It's getting busier down there, too. So anyway. Let's see, what else? Do I know you from someplace?
Yes.
And from here?
All the places you've mentioned.
Okay.
Well,
oh my gosh, hi. Johnson. Holy cow. Thank you. Holy cow. This is... It's amazing. Life keeps moving, doesn't it? Yeah, really. Oh, that's great. Yeah, yeah. He did a lot of building stuff around here. And kept things going a lot. Yes.
I was wondering if you could repeat again a very short description of your kind of Zazen instruction. Was sitting upright, just a very short phrase. Remember what you said there?
Yeah. Upright sitting is Zazen. So, and the instruction in the Fukan Zazengi, it's the first thing that this Japanese Zen monk Dogen wrote when he went to China. He experienced Zazen, you know, like the teaching about that, not just as a means to kind of get relaxed or whatever, but that idea of bringing yourself to oneness, and transmitted that back to Japan. He was coming from a Rinzai tradition. He was already ordained as a Rinzai priest, Dogen was. He felt something lacking. So that was transmitting the Soto Zen. We are a Soto Zen monastery, and you are Soto Zen temple. Teaching about oneness is Dogen wrote this Fukan Zazengi, which is a universal practice of Zazen. That's the first thing he wrote, and that's. We did that in Japan. We chant every evening that Fukan Zazengi. But in that, it says beyond like or dislike, you know, like, you know, bring, can you bring yourself to suchness? And where do you bring yourself to suchness? Not just on the cushion, beyond thinking. You know, he says it's non-thinking, but non-thinking, not just on the cushion. He goes, he writes that very specifically. He said it's a matter of everydayness. So it's 24 hours, zazen. Like, can you just bring yourself to today's day? Hot and humid, or rainy, or balmy and sunshine with lots of pretty leaves. It's all there. And it is beautiful when it's beautiful. But it's constantly arising and disappearing. It'll be looking pretty stark, and you might want to move south in your Minnesota winters up here. Ours are not so good either. So, but we're always judging like that, you know. But suck, you know, good word is suck it up, you know, and it is what it is. So that is the practice, upright. Bring yourself to moment. Okay. Thank you. That's been really my treat. Very cool.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.